If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. It's Thursday. I'm Steve Stewart. As you know by now, we are here every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. And don't forget to like us on Facebook at Above the Fold. And you can stream the show live at realtalk93.com. So I've been told that there are storms headed our way. Looks like looked at a little a map of spaghetti-looking projected paths. And so, you know, it's always a question of when they head around the tip of Florida is, you know, how hard do they turn to the north, is if we're going to get hit or not. And so, anyway, it looks like the weather's going to be very questionable from now on till next week. I understand a lot of rain this weekend over the 4th of July, so not good news there. But I appreciate you joining us today. A lot of stuff to run through here locally, and we're going to get right at it. We've got the fallout from Leon County School Board meeting. And I know that the headlines are about board member Alvis Trippin leaving the meeting, but there's so much that went on. There are a couple of important votes that did take place. So there's a lot to talk about with regards to the school board, and we'll get to it. There's not just the issue around board member Stripling, but the fallout from that, why it happened, what's going on behind the scenes. We've got a little bit of insight there from people that I've talked to. Doesn't appear to be a real good situation. And, you know, that's, we have talked about Talos Reports and Above the Fold reporting on the school board and schools and digging into what's going on with the policymaking. Because, I mean, again, it's 33,000 students and, you know, 4,000 employees there. It's a huge part of the community. And so it will be interesting to unpack this, get to the business they took care of, and then also sort of get an idea of, you know, what's going on there. What caused an elected member to get up and walk out of a meeting that then resulted in them not having a quorum, which meant they had to, you know, they had to take a recess. So we'll dig into that. We'll talk about the CRA. You know, we talk about a lot of different organizations with these initials of Blueprint IA, but the reason I talk about them is because they impact what happens here in Leon County. They impact your pocketbook. They involve a lot of money. Now, the CRA, Community Redevelopment Agency, was in the news over the last 10 years. Some of it not so good. Other people would argue that they have really hit a home run on some issues, Gain Street being one with the development that they promoted there. And I would argue that they were successful in that endeavor. The question there is, did we have to subsidize so much of that development with tax dollars? Well, now the CRA is meeting right now as I'm talking, and they are going to be considering two issues that total the spending of close to $13 million. And they're actually focused in the same area of town. And so we're going to get to that in the bottom of the hour and talk about exactly what that money, where it comes from. We'll give you a little bit of a primer on the CRA and then tell you where that tax money is coming from, how long it's going to be paid, what's the time frame of the projects, where the projects are, what they are, what the hope is that the projects will do. But, you know, when you see the term revitalization, that always raises a red flag. But we'll run through that. Again, it's tax dollars that are being spent in our community. We want to get an idea of what the plan is. Also, we have a city commission meeting scheduled next week, and the agenda just came out today. So I'll take a look at that during the breaks here, and we'll get you caught up to date on, you know, some of the main issues there. I know that they're going to also have a budget workshop on Wednesday. We're getting in that time of the year where they're having to finalize the budget for 2021-2022. You know, one of the things that has become quite obvious with all the money flowing around from federal aid, state aid, because of the COVID pandemic, not as much discussion going on about taxes. Obviously, they haven't had to raise property taxes, but they've had federal aid coming, state aid, and then they've had this massive increase in property values, which means they're going to get more money coming in from property taxes because of the increase in value without even having to raise the actual tax rate. And so the issue is here is, where's this money going to be spent? And, you know, this, the property taxes it's interesting from a homeowner standpoint because your home value can go up, and that means you're going to have to pay more in taxes, but your cash flow coming in could have actually went down, and you're going to have to pay more taxes because an asset, which by definition, if you're living there and it's not an income-producing asset, yet the taxes on that asset are going up. So anyway, we'll go over some of the issues for the city commission meeting and also that workshop. But what we want to do now before we the next segment, we'll talk about the action at the school board. But I did want to go over some of the actual business that they got done at the school board meeting on Tuesday. They did go ahead and they had two separate votes on some safety policies in terms of the resource programs, the school resource deputy program. They voted to go ahead and move forward with the Leon County Sheriff's Office providing resource officers to schools. The amount of that fiscal impact is $1.5 million, but you have to understand that Leon County government is also matching that, which is another $1.5 million. And so hopefully they will match that again this year. And then there's also another staffing issue with a group who's going to help schedule and maintain the law enforcement officers for the school security. That's the integrity group here locally, and that was $950,000. So we're spending close to $3 to $4 million on just actual officers and sort of scheduling component of that for our schools here in Leon County. Another issue that they dealt with was a grant for underperforming schools. Again, it's called the Nita M. Lowy 21st Century Community Learning Centers grants, and these are going to apply to 7 schools in our area. And I'll run through them real quick: Astoria Park, Pineview, Springwood, Sable Palm, Griffin Middle, Bond, and Oak Ridge. And they're going to get various amounts of money, ranging from $130,000 to up to $240,000, for a total of a little over $1.3 million in this grant coming to these schools. The funds will support programs, that are specifically to provide programs to help students meet state and local standards, especially students who attend low-performing schools. And so the funds will be spent on professional development and materials, travel, salaries for teachers, and activity leaders who provide instruction. So that was another issue that they did vote on. And then last, they voted for a contract to deal with filling staffing needs. Now, this is a little bit in the weeds, but they awarded 3 temporary staffing contracts. And if you go to our website, Talis Reports, you can get the specifics on this if you're interested. But they've identified 13 positions that throughout the year they sometimes need temporary personnel. And so they've given these 3 companies the right to bid on these or to fill in these positions. And, you know, they range from the rates that they're paying these range from like HVAC medic mechanic is up to $28 an hour, and then you've got an accountant clerk $22 an hour. But these are all positions that come open and they have to have them filled quickly. And like I said, they've listed a total of 13 positions, and you can go and get the specifics on that if you're interested. So they did get some business done at the school board meeting, but they were in recess for about 20-30 minutes because they didn't have a quorum. And then when the person that showed up to allow them to have a quorum, they had to skip some other items because of a possible conflict of interest. It was sort of a wild school board meeting. And when we get back, what we'll do is we'll go through it from the beginning and the end and give you the details. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Hi, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Spartan Stoneworks. One of the most common and cost-effective upgrades anyone can make to their home is the kitchen. You're almost guaranteed to increase the value of your home with an updated kitchen, but quality materials like granite, quartz, and marble countertops can get expensive. Not when you go to Spartan Stoneworks. Pricing will be lower than anywhere else because they don't mark up the cost of the stone materials. The way they see it, since they didn't carve it out of the mountain themselves, they're not going to charge any made-up fees as if they did. Great pricing, amazing craftsmanship, and quick turnaround from an honest local company. Give them a call at 765-2037. That's 765-2037. And we appreciate their sponsorship of Above the Fold today. All right, so getting right into the Leon County School Board meeting. Look, the meetings was a regular business meeting, and what transpired had to do actually with the mask policy. As you remember, Superintendent Hanna previously had said that his policy was going to be that masks would be voluntary starting June 14th, which meant for the upcoming school year, unless there were any major changes. There are a couple of board members who, I think they understand that this his decision to make, but they're not real excited about following that policy. And so there are a lot of comments made about vaccines, trying to encourage or require employees to get vaccinated, and if you're not vaccinated, to wear a mask. So anyway, that was a debate that took place a few weeks ago. Well, now, during this meeting, wrote an article about this on Monday, that Roseanne Wood, school board member Roseanne Wood, who has a lot of concerns about the impact of COVID, released sort of a list of policy proposals that if they were going to move forward with a mask optional policy, that some of the things that she felt should be taken into account. Some of them were, were common sense, encourage staff people to get vaccinated. But others were a little more difficult. Kids under 12, if their parents wanted them to wear a mask, she was encouraging administrators and teachers to group those kids together away from kids that were not wearing masks. Obviously becomes a little tough to work that out, or it becomes a logistical nightmare. Well, when she released that, I think a group of parents saw that as a possibility that the mask optional policy was going to be overturned. So about 18 to 25 speakers showed up on Tuesday to speak in favor of the mask optional policy. To cut this short, the speakers had their say, the three-minute requirement there. They were all in the room, and after they spoke, Alva Striplin, the school board member, thanked them for coming out and stating their opinions and letting their opinions be known. Then that was followed by board member Daryl Jones, who made comments that basically took this discussion to a racial perspective. And so he said that the speakers don't represent or don't look like the demographic that I represent. He recommended that the speakers should try to reach across whatever political divide there is and bring people to the meeting that don't look like them, that they might, their message might be more well-received. Well, what happened after that was Striplin had gotten up from the dais to go outside after, well, first of all, the speakers started sort of catcalling or interrupting Mr. Jones as he was saying this. They finally left the room. They were followed by Ms. Striplin, who, from what I understand now, talking to people who are out there, she apologized for his comments. She came back into the meeting, got her stuff from the dais, and said, "You no longer have a quorum in this meeting," and left. Two things here. Her statement about not having a quorum, there were two previous school board members that did not make that meeting. So they only had three school board meetings, and you have to have a quorum, which would be three in this case, to conduct business. So with Ms. Striplin leaving, they couldn't even continue the meeting. They couldn't vote on anything. So they actually had to take a recess. And they waited for Didi Rasmussen to show up. And they were able to do, they were able to take care of some business then. But at the same time, Ms. Rasmussen has a potential conflict with construction items. And so she doesn't vote on those. She recuses herself. And so they weren't allowed. They had about eight of those items on the agenda, so they weren't allowed to vote on those. So it was a very short meeting. Obviously, the biggest thing from the meeting was the actions of school board member Alva Striplin and Daryl Jones. So let's talk about Ms. Striplin first. Look, I think for anyone to think that this was just her walking out was based on this single event is not correct. From what I'm hearing, there's a lot of things bubbling up within the school board about this constant reliance on race in these meetings. And look, you know, Commissioner or board member Darrell Jones talks about race a lot. His, as he says, his demographic, he's from the, he represents a district from the South Side. But in addition to that, we've reported and talked about this, Ms. Joey Bowen, who's another commissioner or another board member, excuse me. She routinely talks in very racial terms. She's made more than one time requested that there be a class so that African American students can learn how to respond to law enforcement when they're pulled over or when they're engaging with them. And the thing is a lot of time these comments go unchallenged, or they don't go, not another school board member or administrator says, well, you know, we can't do that. It'd be better maybe to do a class for all people if we're interested in doing that. And this situation with board member Jones, you know, this is where I think Ms. Striplin's going to have a little bit of a difficulty. Just getting up and leaving is not what you do as an elected official. I mean, if you have an issue, why not stay there and talk through it and see if you can get into a dialogue with Mr. Jones and, you know, sort of move the ball forward. I can understand some of the frustration, but again, walking away. Now, that's my perspective. If you start looking at the perspective from the board, you know, I think there's a couple of board members that are reluctant to say things because of how they're going to be the repercussions of taking positions that don't follow, say, a certain narrative. And so instead, I guess they remain quiet, or in this case, they get up and walk out. And so this is eventually going to reach a boiling point. I don't think that was the boiling point. I think that's more of a, of Ms. Striplin walking out was more of a symptom. But I think this is going to reach a point to where there's going to have to be a discussion. And it doesn't need to be with speakers who show up. These are speakers who take their time. They deserve respect when they show up. They got to drive all the way across the town to get there. But this needs to be handled among the school board members and the superintendent. And I just don't think we're getting an honest discussion because of basically the environment that we're in. So, you know, what are we going to have now? Elected officials not running for office because they're afraid that the positions they would have to talk about if they're sitting on the dais would get them in trouble throughout the community. I mean, are they going to get canceled? You know, if Ms. Striplin stayed around and talked to Board Jones about this, about those comments, is she going to suffer some fallout from maybe where she works or from people that she knows? So I think this is not a good thing. And I, you know, you might say I'm reading too much into this, but I don't think so. I think this is exactly where we're headed. Unless you are a part of the majority or a part of a certain way of thinking, I don't think your comments are welcome. And if you do make comments, you get called out, like Mr. Jones basically offended these group of speakers. And he didn't say this as a discussion among the board members. He said it directed to them. Your demographic, you don't look like my demographic, and indicating that their position on the mask was going to be, and their opinions were going to be carried less weight because of what color they were. And I think that even the perception of him saying that is going to be is a major issue. And I think there's going to be fallout from this moving forward. The bigger thing is just the impact it has on public discussion on very important and controversial issues. I don't think we're going to be getting any discussion at the school board on controversial issues. There won't be any back and forth because people are afraid to talk. But anyway, all right, when we get back, we're going to talk about the CRA and $13 million. How's that for a tease? Stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold. And when it's time for leaving, I hope you'll understand that I was born a rambling man. Well, my father was a gambler down in Georgia, and he wound up on the wrong end of a gun. And I was born in the backseat of a Greyhound bus.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. As I said previously, we're going to talk about the Community Redevelopment Agency. Real quick primer, CRA is allowed for in state statutes, and how you create a CRA is you take a geographic area, sort of draw boundaries around it, and then any of the property taxes from those from that geographic area is put into a separate pot and spent within that geographic area. It doesn't go into the general fund to help pay for services in the general fund that benefit everyone across the community. They basically are focused specifically in that geographic area. So what that means is people from a, you know, how does this impact you if you don't live in the CRA? Well, then your tax dollars have to go to make up for what they, the amount of money that is now left into and left in the CRA. Okay, now, the CRA meeting is going on right now, and there's two huge items dollar-wise that are on the agenda. And so I wanted to run through those and give you just an idea of what the money is being spent on. So the first item, the subject is the approval of Frenchtown Quarters and Marketplace Community Benefit Agreement. Now, this is an agreement that will result in a major development down by where the old homeless shelter used to be on Tennessee Street, and by the Renaissance Center, near the Renaissance Center, which is the some of the city operations facilities there. It does have a fiscal impact in the sense that the CRA is going to be subsidizing this project, and the dollar amount is given as $6.5 million. Now, the recommended action by staff is to approve this agreement. This is something that has been in the works for a while, and I'll read you some of the parameters here. At a May 13th, 2021 CRA board meeting, the board directed staff to work with the developer of the project to draft agreement which includes the stated community benefits, the sale of 5 CRA-owned properties to the developer, and for the CRA financial assistance for the project. And this agenda item, which you're going to be voting on, is the draft agreement to meet those criteria. If the agreement is approved, the CRA will provide $6.5 million in funding over 7 years. The grant funds have been tentatively programmed at $1 million per year starting in 2023 and ending in 2028 with a $500,000 final payment in 2029. The development concept includes 2 four-story mixed-use buildings with a total of 130 affordable housing residential units, approximately 21,000 square feet of ground floor retail space, and up to 292 residential and retail parking places. The urgent care clinic on the southwest corner of Tennessee Street and Martin Luther King has been removed from the project and may proceed separately. The May 2020 proposal included efforts to identify fresh food options for the ground floor retail space. The developer is also exploring the possible relocation of the neighborhood medical center to the ground level retail space in the development. And so this is a huge development at Tennessee Street, Martin Luther King Boulevard in that area. Obviously, it is driven. The point is to try to revitalize the Frenchtown neighborhood or that area. And, you know, one of the things that they complain about that neighborhood is that, you know, they're being forced to sort of respond to the growth of growth that's related to FSU, apartment complexes, restaurants. And that is sort of taking away from their neighborhood. There's the land starting to be bought up, and there's nice apartment complexes are being built. And that may be good for FSU, may be good for part of the community. But what it's doing is it is starting to impact the neighborhood. And so this is supposed to be a development that will help facilitate growth in the neighborhood or revitalize the neighborhood. Now, obviously, when government gets involved with this, it's not the private sector demanding these things. To argue that they are needed, I think, is, you know, is one thing, but will they be able to prosper even once it gets started, given the subsidies that will be made? You know, that's the risk you take. Obviously, this is a big development, and so we'll have to see how that goes. Now, they're supposed to vote on that today, actually, momentarily. Now, the other item on this also revolves around the Frenchtown area. This is the adoption and initial funding request for the Frenchtown Neighborhood First Plan. Now, this is has a major fiscal impact between $6.5 to $7.5 million. This is something that says here, this agenda item seeks the Tallahassee CRA's board's approval, acceptance of the Frenchtown Neighborhood First Plan, and requests authorizing funding of about $4.5 million to begin the implementation of the plan. So this is just the beginning. And so what is the Frenchtown Neighborhood First Plan? Well, it was developed under the city's Neighborhood Public Safety Initiative in collaboration with the city of Tallahassee and local public safety officials. One of the major objectives of the initiative is to engage neighborhood residents in efforts to create safer neighborhoods. The group that is sponsoring this or supporting this includes major law enforcement organizations operating in the Tallahassee-Leon County area, as well as the state attorney's office, the U.S. attorney's office, and key community partners. The plan addresses neighborhood safety by focusing on crime prevention and education, community beautification, and community empowerment and volunteerism. So I think one of the things you look at here is this is $6 million that is going into the softer side of law enforcement, trying to get on the front end of crime. So this is a major investment. And, you know, if you look at, they've got a nice chart on the agenda item that shows where they are sort of allocating the money. And I'll run through that real quick. They're looking at about $1.5 million for housing, $250,000 for neighborhood safety and crime prevention, $750,000 on health and resident empowerment. Economic development and community reinvestment would be $1 million. Placemaking and neighborhood imaging would be about $700,000. The development of Brevard Street at Bainbridge Road there is going to get about $1 million. This is a proposal. And they're looking at land use and transportation upgrades of about $350,000. So you're looking at these two projects taken together is, you know, close to $12.5 million. And so we'll see what the votes come out to, and we'll get you up to date on that on Tuesday. But I think if you look at this in a broader spectrum, you know, we heard on the, you know, the debate over the Northeast Gateway, one of the big issues was that, you know, the city or the leaders were ignoring the South Side or some of the other areas that were in need of investment, as we call it, public investment. And, you know, that vote turned out to be 9-3. And, you know, in the next day, at one of the next meetings, we had a couple commissioners come out and talk about how much money was actually being spent on the South Side. And I think this, when I say South Side, low-income neighborhoods, the Frenchtown area is in the South Side CRA. And I think that these numbers were mentioned, but this is, I think this is a narrative that is important to nip in the bud, the chance that, you know, you can disagree with these expenditures, just as a number of people disagreed with the expenditures on the Northeast Gateway. But I think it's important to understand that if you start looking at the lay of the land of where this money is going, I think that, you know, the leaders in our community are trying to make sure that this money is distributed in areas that's needed. Now, you know, the Frenchtown area is famous because it's the 32304 zip code, which, for, you know, because of some metrics that were devised, showed that it was one of the poorer zip codes in the state of Florida. Now, look, there's some argument over what drives that in terms of looking at the student population and whatnot. But again, I think there's two arguments here. Is this money going to be well spent? We can debate that. But the argument that we're not investing money in these areas that are that need investment, that are struggling with economics, struggling with neighborhood safety, this is an answer to that. Yes, we are. And when you start talking about law enforcement and funding police officers, look, this is a huge chunk of money that is going to. And obviously, there are law enforcement people behind promoting this, which they see is a possible answer to alleviating some of the future crime problems. So again, it in a way, it's refreshing to see some of the money being spent. Now, you got to track this, and you got to see what the impact is going to be, and make sure that the money's going to the right areas, and that it's being you're being transparent and you're being accountable. The development is a lot like the developments that took place on Gain Street. I think if you look at Gain Street, you could argue that was a success in the sense of what they were trying to do. However, I think the bigger argument was, did we really need to subsidize the development? Because you're building student apartments across from one of the biggest colleges in the state of Florida, universities. Do you really need a lot of incentive to do that? So from a success standpoint, you know, I think that was it was teed up pretty well. To be successful, you had to execute it, which the city and the CRA and Blueprint did. This development doesn't have some of those things going for it. They're trying to pull a community up that is, you know, in dire straits from an economic perspective. So you're always concerned about those developments, and so we'll have to keep an eye on that. But again, I'd be interested to know, and you'd have to ask yourself, if you would have found out about this $12.5-13 million, if you weren't listening to Above the Fold. And we'll have a story up on how the vote went today later on. So anyway, thanks for tuning in on this issue. When we get back, we will turn our last segment attention to the City Commission meeting for next week, give you a little bit of a precursor of what they're going to be talking about. So stay tuned. Out on the road, I've been down before. All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3, our last segment of the day. Goes by fast when you talk about $6 million projects. If you're a homeowner, excuse me, let me start over with that. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Epps Decorating Center. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home. But it doesn't always have to be a major project. A fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way. And I recommend starting with a visit to Epps Decorating Center. Tyler's premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need interior, exterior paint, high-end, or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you. Give them a call, 385-6649, 385-6649. All right, before we turn to the city issues, so I'm reading the sports headlines, Bobby, and obviously I read the Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne stuff in Jacksonville, but it looks like our quarterback here at FSU is moving quickly take advantage of this name and likeness thing. Have you seen that?
I have not. You're breaking the news to me.
Yeah, well, I got a couple of things. Wait till you see what they're planning on downtown in the city here. But yeah, so the quarterback, Milton, from UCF. Milton. Yeah, so he has started a NIL, or what is it, name, image, and likeness company with a couple other players looking to cash in on, obviously, July 1st today is when they can start making money within this new law.
Oh, that's lit.
Yeah, and so everybody, it's interesting now around the country. I don't know how this is going to work. I mean, I just don't know. Can you just start giving money to these players?
I mean, like, these companies might try. If he's doing that in Tallahassee, I wonder how many of these restaurants are going to be hitting him up. Like, hey, man, put on our shirt, wear this.
So I think, you know, part of it is going to be the players that have been thinking about this and have been more intentional about setting up companies or whatever. It's probably going to be it's always first to market does the best. So we'll see what happens on that. But yeah, that was some of the news. And, you know, it makes you think about, you know, he was one of these guys that was really lobbying for this on Twitter.
And I remember that. Yeah. We talked about it.
So I wonder about if his transfers from, you know, he's transfers to FSU, which is a much, you know, higher brand than UCF. I don't know. I don't know what his motives are, but it looks like, you know, he's obviously on the, you know, the beginning, trying to take advantage of the early part of this new law. But anyway, I thought that was interesting. Look, a little bit more breaking news here, and you know, this hasn't been written about, and I had heard a little bit of rumblings about this in the past, but never could really get anything enough to talk about. But the city commission next week is going to take up an item to sell some property downtown where they were going to build, where they wanted to build the convention center. And they're known as the Chevron and Johns parcels. It's, I think, a total of about 5 acres. but they are selling this property for $8 million, and it is these have been, they're down between City Hall and the Department of Education. I think there's some sand volleyball courts on one of the lots right now, but they're talking about selling it to $8 million to a development company who is looking to build some hotels and restaurants and meeting spaces. And so this is that's a lot of money for two pieces of property downtown Tallahassee. And if you start looking at the parameters here, they're selling the Johns Block, which is phase one, for $4 million, and the Chevron Block, which is phase two. And it's called the Valencia Development Corporation. And it says that they are obviously, like I just said, looking to develop two hotels, restaurants, and meeting spaces. It says that the city has received a written offer to purchase both of the parcels. These parcels are bounded by West Gaines Street, South Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, West Madison Street, and South Duval Street. It says on September 25th, 2019, the City Commission authorized the staff to release a RFP, a request for proposal, for the sale of the two parcels. However, due to the COVID pandemic, the RFP was not released. The sale of the parcels for the hotel, restaurant, and meeting space uses is consistent with the downtown plan, the Tallahassee-Leon County Comprehensive Plan, and the Gaines Street Revitalization Plan, and further advances the city's goal to create that ever-elusive 18-hour downtown. And so it says here the staff is seeking approval. Sounds like this is, here's the key. Staff is seeking approval for a sale to the Valencia Development Corporation in the amount of $8 million without competitive bid solicitation, and requests authorization for the city manager or his designee to execute the documents. Now, that doesn't sound real good without a competitive bid solicitation. You know, the other point on that would be, I don't know who's behind the Valencia Development Corporation, and I don't know what the appraisal of the land is, but I'm sure they've done that. Now, it does say here the net proceeds from the land, less the brokerage fees, will be deposited into the deficiency reserve fund for per city policy. And so that's where the money would go. But this is obviously a pretty big deal coming out of the COVID pandemic with the North American Properties Project at the end of Gaines Street opening up. There's already a hotel there, and restaurants are supposed to be there also with some apartments. Now you've got this development. It's a huge deal. I think also, obviously, when these corporations come into town, when you're working out a deal with the city, they want to make it as positive as possible. And it says here that these hotels would employ approximately 175 employees, about 70 employees at the Courts Hotel. There will be no minimum wage jobs at either hotel. We encourage promotion within, and there's a definite path from entry-level staff position to higher-paying salaried management positions. It says all our current general managers were promoted up within the ranks, usually from entry-level positions. Now, this obviously is to bolster their case for buying this property. It says here, Valencia looks forward to working with the renowned Dedman College of Hospitality at FSU to set up paid internships in formal programs developed in partnership with the college. And it also says here that Valencia is active in each community in which we operate. Every executive and a hotel's executive committee joins a separate local board and serves the community. All employees receive 40 hours of philanthropic paid time off per year to serve the approved charity or community service organization of their choice. And each property has a robust annual budget for donations of hotel services to local organizations. Well, I hope they have a robust advertising budget also. But so they are really making a play here for the lot here. Now, it does say, and this is an answer to an above question about the price, says here that a value determination by a staff state-certified appraiser estimated the value of the land to be approximately $7.7 to $7.8 million. And so, this is the rationale they're going to use for selling this without a competitive bid. And so, I don't know what the rules are on this, but a lot of times if you can, you got somebody that you want to partner up with because of what they're bringing to the table, and instead of doing a competitive bid, you can do an appraisal like this, and you can say, look, this isn't worth the process of getting another couple hundred thousand dollars for the property. Let's go with this company that we know we want and what they can deliver. So anyway, big news here. I don't think it's been promoted anywhere else. So you heard it first here on Above the Fold. And that brings it into our Thursday edition. So listen, have a safe July 4th holiday. Try to stay dry, and we'll be back on Tuesday. I'm Steve Stewart. You've been listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.